All right, good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday, September, what's today's day, guys?
24th.
Okay, this is written today. And really, history is going to be made over the next 8 weeks or so. We have not seen something like this, at least not in my lifetime, and I'm the oldest one around the table, in which we have a Supreme Court position coming available to be nominated, and we're this close to an election. And this is a big deal. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed away. I'm only giving context because I know this podcast will be listened to even in a few years when it's not so much a deal. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed away. She's one of the more liberal justices on the Supreme Court. Her passing presents an opportunity for conservatives to put a conservative on the Supreme Court. Right now it's kind of 4-4. With Ginsburg, I mean, it's kind of 4-4 with John Roberts in the middle, and we never know which way, we being conservatives, never know which way John Roberts is going to go on any issue. This article is titled, from the Christianity Today, Why the Supreme Court Makeup Matters Beyond Abortion. I was talking to my students, and nobody really even understood what the purpose of the Supreme Court was, which I was frustrated with, but I would dare say that even our listeners to this podcast, some of them don't know the purpose of the Supreme Court. And that is to determine whether a law is or is not constitutional. And that's a big deal. We have three branches of the government, and the Supreme Court, many would argue, is out of control with the power that they presently have. I can testify in the 80s that the Supreme Court did not get the attention that it gets today. It just did not get the level of news coverage, who the justices were, what's the makeup of the court. It wasn't as politicized long ago as it is today. So conservatives are now getting an opportunity to put a justice in office. And President Trump has made it clear that he's going to do this. And it looks like that there shouldn't be anything that will keep him from doing it. Can you think of something, Jack, that's going to keep him from doing it?
He has the two Republicans. What is their name?
Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and Susan Collins from Maine.
Yeah, and Collins has come over.
Yeah, she seems to be walking in the middle.
And Murkowski says that she's open to it, but no, the other one, Collins, said it doesn't matter.
No, Collins has done it. It's Murkowski.
Yeah, Murkowski's kind of open to the idea of, I'm not going to actively be a Republican pushing for a vote to come to the floor. But if it comes to the floor, I'm going to exercise my vote in accordance to my beliefs and not hold that person back. Is the kind of the idea I got from the article that was posted probably 12, 13, 14 hours
ago. Right, but the reality is he doesn't need those two. He's got 53 senators. In the thing, so he can still get his simple majority.
With 51.
Right. He can even get it with a tie, because Pence will come in and cast the tie-breaking vote, and he'll still win.
Yeah. And that's the interesting piece, too, is because, like, his third, the political people who are out there looking at the landscape are putting the three ladies in order. Alison Jones Rushing was his most recent federal court appointee, and she was Senate approved, strict on party lines, 53-44. I think was the vote that took down to brought her in. Yeah, 53-44 party line, and she's 38 years old, and she was one of Scalia's interns, the way some the other ones were as well.
All right, let's get into the first couple of paragraphs of the article.
So last week's death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg represents the third opportunity for President Donald Trump to nominate a Supreme Court justice in his first term. So three judges in 4 years. A third of evangelicals, by belief, cited Supreme Court nominees and abortion stance as reasons for voting for Trump in 2016. Many evangelicals and pro-life Americans have celebrated the possibility that another conservative judge could shift the court toward overturning Roe v. Wade and reshaping abortion law in the country. Yet the new makeup of the court will address crucial issues for the church that extend far beyond abortion. Christianity Today asked legal experts how a new Supreme Court appointment replacing Ginsburg stands to affect evangelicals outside of Roe v. Wade, and here are their responses, calling out issues such as religious freedom, racial equality, child protection, and free speech. Barry P. McDonald, a law professor at Pepperdine University, says, as it stands, the Supreme Court is controlled by a majority of five solid conservative justices who either have a strong record of supporting religious freedom rights or give every indication that they will develop such a record. If President Trump succeeds in appointing Justice Ginsburg's successor, that will likely add one more justice to this coalition. While an additional vote is not necessary to maintain this trend, it could prove important to religious freedom proponents in cases where Chief Justice Roberts might moderate his vote in an attempt to shield the court as an institution from charges that it has become too political and divisive, or where any conservative justice moderates his or her vote for whatever reason. This is most likely to occur in cases where religious beliefs might conflict with laws prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual and gender orientation. Indeed, both Roberts and Justice Neil Gorsuch recently alluded to such future contests in voting to interpret federal workplace laws as barring such discrimination. Kim Colby, a director of the Christian Legal Society's Center of Law and Religious Freedom, says that Justice Ginsburg's replacement potentially could provide a more secure footing for our basic human right of religious freedom. In 27 years on the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg heard over 30 religious freedom cases. Unfortunately, her support for religious freedom was lackluster. Justice Ginsburg previously voted in favor of religious schools' freedom to choose their teachers, but then voted against that right in a recent case. She voted once for and three times against robust application of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Her two votes in favor of prisoners' religious freedom, as well as a Muslim employee's right to wear a hijab, were commendable. But four times she voted to uphold the government's exclusion of religious speech from the public square. Justice Ginsburg advanced a theory of the Establishment Clause that excluded religious students from government programs funding education. Several times she voted to remove religious symbols from public property, and when comparing her votes in recent cases to votes by Justice Neil Gorsuch and Justice Brett Kavanaugh, the comparison suggests that someone nominated by President Trump will likely be a good steward of religious freedom. Lynn Marie Combe, law professor at Regent University, says that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's replacement can make a dynamic difference for America's children in three key cases: one past, one present, and one, hopefully, future. The past: transgender rights. Bostick versus Clayton County, Georgia. The court held that firing an individual for being transgender violates Title VII. Ginsburg's replacement could alter future transgender rulings, particularly as biological female athletes seek to protect their rights in girls' sports.
Okay, let's stop for a moment and talk about that. I really don't think that the American public grasps the degree to which that will be an issue in the future. I really don't think that enough conservative and liberal parents who have girls who are athletes are thinking enough about the implications of this and the direction that women's sports could potentially be impacted by this. Surely this is going to come to the Supreme Court. Think about all the different sports in which the biological differences between a male and female are so substantial that the female can't be competitive. Give me an example of a couple of those sports. How about golf? Is there enough of a difference in how far a man can drive the ball in comparison to how much a female can drive the ball? When you go to a golf range, they actually have different starting points for females on the initial drive.
The tee box.
Right, right. Is that what it's called, the tee box? Right. What about track and field?
Yeah, we've already seen that came up, and I don't know if this is the case. When in point, actually it wasn't because this dealt with the firing, but they allowed two males who identified as females to enter into a track and field event, and of course they dominated the competition, and girls who were in the top four were now pushed out, and a couple of them lost scholarship opportunities because they didn't continue to place.
And this is only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
Yeah. I think the market will correct itself, actually.
The market. Explain yes. That, John.
Well, and I didn't believe that until about 10 days ago. And that
aha moment?
Yes, when The Big Ten decided in a very controversial, well, they just declared what everybody else knew, and that is money talks, because they decided to play football while there's no students on campus. So here's an organization that is supposed to be about education, you know, not allowing any students on campus, but their student athletes can be on campus because they generate income from television contracts. So whereas I see it might be an issue with track and field and other things people don't watch, it is never going to happen in football.
Because it's never going to happen in basketball.
Basketball, it's just not, because money, people want to see a competitive sport. And the problem is all those other outlier sports, I'm sorry everyone who loves those sports, they just don't matter.
Yeah, they're great pastimes and hobbies, but they don't draw in revenue.
You know, but is anything that's going to have a TV contract and a competitive element to it is it's going to be modified by that. So we're going to have, yes, we are going to have people try to push the envelope and issue, but at some point there's going to become a like a civil breaking point where it will not be accepted because, you know, you're not going to put a female on my Atlanta.
But I'm not suggesting it goes that way. I'm suggesting it's the reverse that way.
Right.
I'm suggesting every feminist who is all about women's rights should be more concerned about this than even I am as a conservative, because when a transgender male can declare himself a girl and then go destroy every girl on a track and field event because his thighs are like this, I'm holding my hands up, and his heart is stronger than the female heart,
and I think that
how does the market fix that?
Well, I think that anything that's tied to money and TV is going to fix it. Anything that is, you know, like in college, it won't be fixed. So we're going to have this huge double standard that's just irrationally adopted and accepted by the liberals. We're going to have that. But to a certain extent, you know, I see that money is going to be an issue because people are going to see through that farce. I mean, when it's one or two, but, you know, when it becomes a real issue and then the competitive nature of the sport has been diminished, so whereas advertisers aren't going to pay
right,
for this ridiculous
thing. Right, but one of those two entities are going to take this court. That family that you made reference to, that their daughter lost this scholarship opportunity, mm-hmm. is a prime candidate. They hire a lawyer who wants to make a name for themselves, and that lawyer works pro bono in order to defend this case, mm-hmm. and then that case becomes one of these, what we just said, Bostic versus Clayton County, Georgia, one of those kind of cases, and eventually the Supreme Court is going to have to decide, do biological parts determine gender, or can I self-identify at whatever gender I want, at whatever day I want?
Yeah.
It'll either go the direction of a court case that rules in what we would consider to reaffirm the natural gender, or it will be the death of girls' sports.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, because what ends up happening, and you know, we mentioned it with these girls that lost scholarship opportunities, that's scholarship opportunities. Let's not even talk that way. All right? I mean, you go over into our high school, and any given PE class, you put them on the basketball floor, or you put them on the soccer field, and the girls want to consider, you know, just the other week they had done that in our school, and the girls are like, well, that's fine, you know, let's play volleyball the next day, and we'll beat you guys. And what will end up happening is girls will get tired of that, and then they're just going to quit. It's not fair, it's not fun, it's not competitive. They then have to deal with the fact that there are these biological men in their meets, and that they have to deal with locker rooms and things like that. It will just completely close off girls' sports.
So how does a women's soccer team, how do you play against a women's soccer team that's dominated with guys that are claiming to be themselves as females? Because there's plenty of men out there that they can't do well in that men's sport, but if they cross over to the women's sport, they suddenly become an all-star. The fifth place guy on the 400, the sixth place guy on the 400 now goes to women's sports, and you know what he's getting? A gold medal.
Yeah.
He can't medal on the men's side, but he crosses over, and now suddenly he's dominating on that sport.
It'd be interesting to see in some of those, I guess I'd maybe label them secondary sports, the Olympic sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, we don't really see this. You know, it's one thing when America's having this conversation, but every 4 years when the world comes together in a different city, in a different nation, to compete,
I don't know. I just don't see that, you know, panning out to go well.
Jonathan, is that why you are saying it might take care of itself? Because I kind of see
and
the
second
same
component
point.
Of that is it could either be the death of feminism, which I don't think it will be, or at some point feminists are going to wake up and go, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to be the death of feminism by any means. So I think they'll become more concerned about it.
Right. I think that, so, I mean, that too will be kind of a tamping down nature. Now, I'm not making, you know, predictions and prognosticating. I'm just saying there could be the opportunity, because what we've seen is money kind of controls everything. I mean, that's just the reality.
And so, money talks.
Yeah, and so what I would see is even if it got to the Supreme Court, you know that in the back of their mind, that's considered, even whatever they say, politics and money still... We were talking about it being more political and divisive than ever.
Yeah, so, and what I was referring to has actually gone to court. A transgender lawsuit on track in the spotlight, May 27, 2020, Boise, Idaho. And it was two female athletes at Idaho State won a federal judge to dismiss a lawsuit challenging the new state law, Idaho's new state law, banning transgender women from competing in women's sports. It went into effect July 1st, 2020, and it was born out of situations that arose where, and here it is, Lindsay Heacock, 19, had competed as a man in high school and then went to Boise State and qualified for the women's cross country team and began destroying the competition. The Republican-controlled Senate, House, and governor in Idaho signed the law into effect. They're saying that it violates the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. It violates Title IX. So they're trying to strike it down. It violates the Fourth Amendment. It violates the 14th Amendment.
And this is a transgender male. This is a male who's perpetrating himself to be a female and competing now at the college level as a female. And he's saying that it's unconstitutional for you to take away my right to be female.
By that law.
Yep.
To compete in these things. But the girls are saying, no, uphold the law. They're petitioning the federal courts to uphold the law as constitutional, not to force it to be struck down. So we could see this one go to the Supreme Court.
Right, and a woman like Ruth Bader Ginsburg would rule in favor of the transgender over the conservative traditional role each and every day, all day long.
She would be in much of a quandary, because think about it. On the one hand, if you just say yes to the transgender issue, then now once again you've got males by biology
dominating
women, which
you're right.
She can't stand.
Right, but that was the beginning of who she was, John.
Right.
We saw a progression in who she was over the 27 years.
So,
when she entered in office, she was all about women's rights. Right. And she moved from that to the LGBT and to that whole... She's the first justice to marry same-sex marriage. She became a supporter. And her last words, her goal... is to form a more perfect union, okay? So she grabs those constitutional words, and she's saying that her job is to interpret the Constitution in such a way to make us a more perfect union.
And what, like a canon within a canon.
Right, exactly. A canon within the canon. And so you're right, she would have been in a quandary, because the young Ginsburg would have said, no, we need to keep the women need to have a right to compete on a level playing field. I don't know what the old Ginsburg would have done.
Well, and the second part of that quandary is that if you say yes to the LGBTQ and say they can compete, then you've got this issue with the male by biology dominating in. But if you admit that they have an advantage by doing that, then what you have admitted is that there is a weakness in the female sex.
Yes, sure you have.
So, I mean, they're... And once again, we talk about this all the time, but the liberal mind works itself into these corners. If they would just do what God says, there's answers for these things. But they've painted themselves into this really bizarre corner in which
hard to get
they're
out.
Doomed. I mean, they're doomed.
All right, what's the present-day case?
So the present-day case is foster care. In Fulton v. Philadelphia, First Amendment rights of Christians who provide foster care are at stake as the court soon determines whether the government can condition a religious agency's ability to participate in the foster care system on practices that it contradicts its religious beliefs. And in the future, hopefully, child pornography. In 2002, Ashcroft v. Free Speech Coalition struck down two provisions of the Child Pornography Prevention Act of 1996 as overboard, giving a tremendous win as overbroad, giving a tremendous win to the adult entertainment industry. Child pornography has since proliferated. Children need protections that Ginsburg's replacement could help deliver. Beyond Roe, American evangelicals want to see all children protected, born and unborn.
All right, so, you wish, I do, that I could reach through the mic and kind of shake every evangelical Christian and say...
You could slap the mic and it'll vibrate their speakers and whatever they're listening on.
Would work?
It'll turn, yeah.
This is a big deal. This is why I think that Jack Farmer should not write in his libertarian and that he should cast a vote for Trump. Because of this. Not because I'm a Trump supporter. I'm not. I should be, perhaps, but I'm not. I get bothered by the manner in which he communicates. I don't like the way he communicates. I don't think that he should be insulting people. I think he should be talking public policy. I think there's enough public policy issues to talk about without having to insult somebody. I think he ought to make his case for why he's a better choice. You don't need to call him Sleepy Joe. Talk about the policies. Talk about how you're going to do this. Talk about the fact that in your administration, you've put two solid conservatives in office. You're getting ready to put a third. I don't think the American public, Jack, understands this person that he nominates is going to be serving five presidents from now, six presidents from now. We have justices that are in office when Reagan was there, appointed by Reagan. Mm-hmm. And you know what they're doing?
Kennedy.
They're still making a difference.
Yeah, and it's interesting because let's just say, I'll go on record as saying I'm not going to speak for you guys, but I think one of the reasons that Trump talks that way, he's just maybe not as intelligent as some of the presidents we've had in the past. He doesn't really grasp the issues. He's a bold, what got him by in business. And, you know, he's got his strengths and great weaknesses. And he just goes with his strengths, which is just talking and talking and talking in that way and all that. But the reality is that that's okay because God understands what's going on. And here we've got this president for such a time as this who, I mean, in two places... is going to three, right?
Potentially
three. Going to put. I mean, when has that happened?
It hasn't.
It's amazing.
Three and 4 years
by the
yeah.
most hated or beloved, who you talk to, president of all time.
Mm-hmm. Most controversial.
Certainly.
You know,
when I heard about it on Friday, I was at the house, and I had this very thought: is this a gift from God? I had that thought. Is this a gift from God? Because if Biden gets into office, Biden replaces Ginsburg with somebody. If we thought Ginsburg was
very
liberal,
progressive, yeah.
Okay, you ain't seen progressive yet. Because if he picks a young person, which seems to be the trend, whatever young person he picks, however progressive she is,
not just 20 years,
right? Imagine what 27 years of because. When Bill Clinton nominated Ginsburg, he was concerned that she was too conservative. Imagine that.
Yeah.
That she was mm-hmm. too conservative.
Yeah, and you ask, when has this ever happened before? Okay, so the WhiteHouse.gov says this. Article 3 of the Constitution, which establishes the judicial branch, leaves Congress significant discretion to determine the shape and structure of the federal judiciary. Even the number of Supreme Court justices is left to the Congress. At times there have been as few as six, while the current number nine with one Chief Justice and eight Associate Justices, has only been in place since 1869. The Constitution also grants Congress the power to establish courts inferior to the Supreme Court. And to that end, Congress has established the United States District Courts, which try most federal cases, and 13 United States Courts of Appeals, which review appealed district court cases. A federal judge can only be removed through impeachment by the House of Representatives and conviction in the Senate. Judges and justices serve no fixed term. They serve until death, retirement, or conviction by the Senate through impeachment.
That's a big deal.
By design, this insulates them from the temporary passions of the public and allows them to apply the law with only justice in mind and not electoral or political concerns. So in 1869, President Ulysses S. Grant had the opportunity that Trump has now to appoint 3 Supreme Court justices in one term.
That was the last time.
That was the last time.
Wow. Think about that. We got to go back to the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Well, post-Civil War.
Post-Civil War.
Right. Yeah.
Wow, to get the second time this has happened.
They're both Republicans, by the way.
Wow. All right, the foster care thing. You know that the degree to which you are evangelical is going to become more and more of an issue when it comes to foster care and more of an issue when it comes to adopting. Because the government's got their finger in it.
Well, that's because of the Establishment of Religion Clause, mm-hmm. which they referenced earlier in the
right.
article.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And how do we interpret that clause?
Right.
Okay. Thomas Berg, he's a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, says that one obvious evangelical priority for the court's new justice beyond abortion is religious freedom, which the court already strongly supports. Majorities of 5 to 7 justices have protected religious schools' rights to hire religion teachers, the religion teachers they choose. Employers' rights to object to covering employees' contraception and families' right to choose religious schools for their children and still receive government educational assistance. Justice Ginsburg dissented from all those rights. The new nominee will strengthen them. But the nominee should also be questioned about another priority, racial equality. Christians must care about this because racism denies that some fellow humans have their full God-given dignity. And justices should care because the Constitution's 14th Amendment was meant to eliminate practices that had kept black people constricted even after their formal enslavement ended. Republican appointees typically commit to enforcing a provision's original meaning. The next justice should apply the amendment vigorously to racially unjust practices of our day. Carl H. Esbeck, a law professor emeritus at the University of Missouri, says that Justice RBG was an effective legal activist, first for the ACLU and later as a high court justice. To admire her work depends on whether one believes the role of a judge is to align the law with one's sense of justice, or is it to subordinate oneself to the nation's organic document and the rule of law. Unlike Justice Ginsburg, we can aspire to a successor who will interpret the U.S. Constitution in accord with the original meaning of the adopted text. I also hope for reconsideration of the free speech case of Hastings chapter of the Christian Legal Society v. Martinez. Authored by Justice Ginsburg, this was a 5-4 decision denying student religious organizations access to meeting space at a state university campus without first agreeing that there be no qualification that the organization's student officers and members conform to a statement of faith.
All right, that again would be an issue that all of us at this table would want to be concerned about. Think about what's one of the more famous organizations on a college campus?
Campus Crusade for Christ.
Navigators.
Right. Campus Outreach.
Yeah. Right.
Young Life.
Right. These organizations in which they want to have unique character qualifications for their student leaders.
Mm-hmm. Well, even locally, I mean, what's the Youth for Christ is a local organization here that we have in our town. Right. And I know it's larger than just our town, but I know several guys that work with it, and they have difficulty because of public educational institutions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're very limited.
Yeah.
All right, how are you going to pronounce this next?
All right, so Rena M. Linsvalden, law professor at Liberty University. Conservative justices view the Constitution as a source of and limit on their power. recognizing that the separation of powers best protects our God-given liberties and that the Constitution contains an amendment provision to make changes when necessary. Liberal justices circumvent that amendment provision and simply change or create law to suit what they believe and they believe the culture desires. But when those justices promote the right, quote-unquote, of people to do whatever pleases them amidst a culture that promotes godlessness and wickedness, Romans 1:18, government punishes those who proclaim the unchanging truth of Scripture. That punishment takes many forms, including firing employees who do not promote a particular agenda, arresting sidewalk counselors, singling out churches for censorship, labeling the truth of Scripture as hate speech, or stripping people of the right to self-defense against a despotic government. Appointing the right justice helps us, as Justice Scalia said, guard against the black-robed supremacy.
Okay, Mr. Libertarian, what are your thoughts?
So in the last three, the views of Thomas Berg, professor at the University of St. Thomas, who wanted to speak on the topic of race, in race healing, to the Hastings chapter of the Christian Legal Society in the concept of making sure that we have the ability to have a meeting space, and to the last professor at Liberty University, in this, they all three are going to tie back to one particular item that they're looking for in the Supreme Court justice, and that's strict constitutional interpretation. In other words, getting it back as close as we can to the Constitution itself, not the precedent law that has been decided here and there along the way. But to be able to overturn some of these, to go back to where it goes back to. And in essence, we definitely want to see that, but we have to understand that it will have some swing to it that goes both ways. Because anytime you go back to that point, you're going to be going back and re-looking at all the laws in the interpretation of it and how it's applied. And the 14th Amendment is so stinking vague as it is. And that's what they always want to go back to, is the idea of what is the 14th Amendment, how does it set precedents for us. And what it really says is that no one, no any state, so nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, our property without due process of law, or to deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protections of the law. And the thing of it is that we've tied the 14th Amendment to almost everything. Your right to go to school is governed by the 14th Amendment, because the
I don't want to go to school.
The high school diploma that you receive is indicative of how much money you can make. So in other words, in the earliest stages of your life, in the earliest stages of your life, you're already earning money. So that the third grader has a 14th Amendment right to an education because they're earning money.
So I'm gonna throw one out there
to the
because
future.
You know, I'm a, I guess a closet libertarian, not quite there yet, but I struggle with the second one, maybe the first one we let out with, Kim Colby, director of the Christian Legal Society. It says this, Justice Ginsburg's replacement potentially could provide a more secure footing for our basic human right of religious freedom. Do we believe that as Christians, that we have a basic human right?
She's not arguing as a Christian.
I know, but
she's arguing as a citizen of the United States.
Right. So, but we're Christians around this table. So When I think about the United States and its Constitution, and when I think about voting and trying to have what impact, I personally at many times feel quite at odds with the ideals and the stresses of our Constitution and the nation in which we live, because so much is made about personal liberty, so much is made about freedom. And what I see in the Scripture is actually I'm not free. I'm free in Christ, but that means I'm also His slave. That means I'm a member of the heavenly kingdom. And we don't really believe that people have the freedom to religiously without recompense from a almighty judging God, and it's sometimes it just feels a little out of step. And I understand. So what I have to come to, and here's where I am, is this is a societal pragmatic thing, but it doesn't certainly line up with what I believe, because I believe if you don't believe that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, then you're not going to have and inherit eternal life. You can't believe that it's no God. You can't believe that it's Buddha. You can't believe these other things. So I have a very limited view of religious freedom, personally, because of the scriptures. So now I'm asked to make a cast a vote based on the idea that we're going to create a society in which we have religious freedoms. And so, to me personally, that feels like it's out of step with what I see in the scripture. So, frankly, at that point, then what I'm really saying is I have a secondary truth that I hold, which is pragmatic and societal, and it doesn't match the truth that I find in the scripture.
Well, I'd say you're like going at it with that angle, where I would go more at like love your neighbor and go from that angle or that perspective in regards to how I vote, and the fact that I would say there's a possibility if I vote one way that it can be worse for my neighbor than if I voted a different way.
Okay, so let's say that Trump gets this justice through the system. Okay, and we got these three conservatives here. Who's the next justice that's going to go down in the next term? And let's say that Biden is the president. What's the likelihood that he's going to have one?
I don't think there is one.
I think we have to have on this table the conversation about the Democrats' threat to expand
the size of the court.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they've talked about that already, haven't they?
Okay, let me go on record and say, this is what if I could advise Trump for 5 minutes, this is how I would advise Trump. I would say, Mr. President, identify who your nominee is. Mm-hmm. Tell everyone, the entire American public, if you make me the president of the United States for the next term, on day one of that appointment, I am going to put her in as my number one nominee. So in order to keep the country united right now, to not create a political earthquake for the next 8 weeks, I'm going to present to you Amy Barrett. These are all her qualifications. These are all the senators that are going to be behind her. If they get to keep their office and you vote me in, then American public, this will be your ninth Supreme Court justice, so that the Democrats won't have the ammunition of what you're saying, Jack, which is they're going to change the composition of the court. And they've already identified that they're either going to go to 13 or 15.
Yeah.
13 is the number I've heard, which means they're going to make Biden 4 justices in 4 years. Okay? And that will forever change the composition of the Supreme Court. But Mr. Trump may not be thinking like that, because he's got to appeal to his base. And he's told every evangelical that votes for him that he will appoint conservative Supreme Court justices. So it could be that if he doesn't do it, it'll be just like George Bush with that no new taxes. Remember that? Anybody in the table old enough to remember that?
Yeah.
And it cost him the second term because they said he didn't keep his word. So Trump...
Wait, I thought Bush did serve 2 terms. Sorry.
So it is quite the quandary. What would you do if you had 5 minutes with the president to advise him, Jack? Besides telling him that you're not even going to vote for him. But besides that...
I hate to say it, but I would say if you're really strongly looking to push this through, and you know that you have the possibility of losing the election, then you need to set yourself in a position that if you're that adamant that you've got to push it through, you set yourself in a position where you don't polarize the electorate any further. And in that case, my recommendation would be Joan Larson. to the Supreme Court justice because she worked on Biden's team in a presidential campaign back in the 80s.
Wow.
And she was seen as a moderate Democrat. She's now a moderate conservative.
Okay, I can't believe that you'd even consider advising him. That would be political suicide.
No, I don't think it would be. I don't think it would be. I think he would pull back what he's lost in the middle by being as strong as he is over on the right.
Okay. All right.
For those who are listening.
I mean.
And how many is that? That's the whole problem, Nate. Yeah. How many people are... Let's say we did a man on the street interview right now. And we just went around to the city of Fayetteville and we said, who's Ruth Bader Ginsburg and what's her significance? Like, when I ask my students... What's the purpose of the Supreme Court? I told you this, Jack. I was so exasperated that not one of them could give me an answer as to what the Supreme Court does and why it's important.
Biden was VP for what president?
Right.
They probably struggle. Some of them would not pass it.
Probably. Sometimes on Sunday mornings, sometimes I feel like I wish I could give a sermon and a civics lecture just to educate people on the basic things that there's... John, there's just such a profound level of ignorance, and to your point, I think that there's this degree to which I am constantly going, Sean, you're a citizen of heaven. You have a king who's an eternal king. Your loyalty is to Christ and Christ alone, and yet you're charged with the responsibility of seeking the welfare of the city that you live in. And in that regard, I would say that we do need to seek to nominate a Supreme Court justice that will give us the most religious freedom as possible. And I realize that means that I'm affirming the same level of freedom to a Muslim that I am to an evangelical. I understand I'm doing that. But I believe in...
Race, sex, and everything.
Right. Yeah. I believe in the power of the gospel to defeat that. And so I don't need the government to get behind me and outlaw the Muslim religion. I just need the freedom to be able to preach the gospel. And I can show you through the preaching of God's word that this is far better.
So let's put it this way. Trump has, with who they believe, this is three, and chances are somebody's leaked it out enough for us to know that these are the three women we're talking about.
Right, yeah.
We're talking about Alison Jones Rushing, 38 years old. She's a sitting appellate court judge, federally appointed, March 2019. We're talking about Joan Larson, former moderate Democrat, moved over to the Republican Party in the mid-90s, served with Bob Dole's team, in a presidential bid, worked with Biden previously to that in a presidential bid. Amy Barrett, who you already mentioned.
Right. It should be Barbara, right? The third should be Barbara.
I didn't look at her.
Right, who do you have as the third?
Alison Jones Rushing.
Okay.
So you get Amy Barrett. So if President Trump wants to put the most conservative judge he can put,
it's Amy. Yep.
And she's so conservative and that who was it? Feinstein said your dogma exudes from you.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And speaking to her Catholicism.
Yep.
And her religious beliefs.
Right.
Larson seems to be the most moderate, middle ground. You would probably have a John Roberts type of situation with her.
And she only has one last name as opposed to the other two.
Alison Jones Rushing, if you want to have the longest impact on the Supreme Court.
She's young.
Yeah. She's 38 years old. She's considered a rising star. She has served with David Sintel in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, who was a Reagan appointee. He's now over FISA, the Federal Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. She worked with Gorsuch, so there would be a partnership there in the... within the Justice Department itself, within the Supreme Court. And Gorsuch, of course, worked with Clarence Thomas. So you get a nice block in that. And I think that would have a massively long-term effect if he wanted to go for length of time in which his presidency could impact the Supreme Court.
Is Thomas the oldest one now?
I'm not sure. Look that up. So the one that is also being contended for is Barbara Lagoa. Lagoa Lagoa would be an undeniable boon. They say Florida-based Cuban American jurist from a must-win state, referring to Florida, who would help the president navigate through the Hispanic-heavy Arizona Nevada area right there. And they also say that one of the advantages of going her is it would be hard for the Democrats to sit there in front of the whole nation and destroy her. Think about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings that were just an utter circus. And, well, now you're watching this. Not only are you seeing a female get beat upon. See, nobody has any problems when a white male gets beat upon. They can just beat upon a white male all day long. But change it to a female. But wait a minute. Change it to a female Hispanic. So now all of a sudden, this is going to be the first Hispanic on the court, and you're destroying her. So how many Democrats are going to be willing to vote against a female Hispanic justice? Think about the conversations that must be happening in the White House to make the right decision. Because Amy Barrett is the most conservative, but she's also, she looks the most Caucasian, she looks the most white, she's just adding another white justice to the Supreme Court.
You know, what's interesting is you mentioned the...
Stephen Byers, the oldest.
You mentioned the uneducated piece, or the piece where the apathy of the young people, and, you know, I often wonder about that because, you know, we rail against that. We talk about how they're just playing their video games, and that they're the ones that are, you know, heavily lean towards the LGBTQ and all of this entitlement. But the reality is their selfish nature also means they don't go out to vote.
Right.
So I sometimes think...
That's fine, right?
Just... Let sleeping dogs lie. I mean, why are we messing with that?
I mean, don't pause your video game on voting day.
Right. Play right away. You got to win, right?
I mean, yes. I mean, you know, and here's the other balancing factor of that. You know, I think some component of that is age, because there's just like this natural thing where, and I know it's moving upward, which is bad. And you've heard me on other podcasts. I'm not for video games and not being outside and working and things. But the reality is that there's some component, at least in our culture right now, it's age. And so
we raise the minimum voting age, 21, you know, because...
At some point, you get a little bit better clue in reality of life, and then you start getting involved in voting and things like
right
that.
Right now,
let's go back a couple steps and switch it back over to ownership.
See, I think
if
a
you
lot
don't
of
pay
them,
a property tax, you don't get to vote.
Right. You know, I think a lot of them think maybe you just vote on TikTok. You know, just, you know, cast your vote on TikTok. Yeah, we'll just let them think that, you know. It's just, I don't know sometimes. Hmm. I think that we worry about things that are just going to take care of themselves.
Well, God's going to take care of it. There's no doubt God's going to take care of it. Acts makes it very clear. He sets up the nations, and he brings them down, and he establishes the habitation. There's no doubt about
that. And sin has
always nations for their wickedness.
Right, right. Yeah. Sin, that's what I was going to say. Sin has always brought people and nations down.
Yeah. And I think that's...
You have something more, Jack? All right, we're going to wrap this podcast up. We appreciate you all listening, and we will have to tackle this topic once or twice more, because... In the next 8 weeks, it's only going to become more controversial. By next Thursday, we'll know who the candidate is that he nominates, and there'll be much more written about it. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.